This is 91.7 WVXU's Cincinnati Edition. I'm Marianne Zalesnik, filling in for Michael Monks. It has been a week. States of emergency declared in Ohio, Kentucky, Indiana, the city of Cincinnati, Hamilton County, and that's just to name a few. Universities canceling face-to-face classes. K through 12 schools closing starting next week with only at-home instruction. Parades canceled and hospitals preparing. The coronavirus and COVID-19 taking its toll. Today, we're going to talk about what has happened this week and what we might expect in the coming week. And we'll even tell you about some non-COVID-19 stories you may have missed. You can call 513-419-7100 with your questions. You can email talk at wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Joining me first, we're going to have Ohio Statehouse correspondents Andy Chow and Joe Ingles. We're working on setting up that line with Andy. I don't think that is officially set yet, but Joe, you are with us right now. How are you?
Good morning. It's great to be here.
Good morning where you are. You're actually calling from a remote location right now, but we appreciate you being here today. It's been a very busy week. You've covered the Statehouse for a long time. Have you ever seen anything quite like this?
No. I've never seen anything like this, even in the days following 9/11, where we had some limited availabilities with different, utilities, different public meetings, with different things in government. I've never seen anything like this. And I think what really makes people uncomfortable is the unknown factor of it. And even for the medical professionals, when we hear Ohio Department of Health Director Dr. Amy Acton, when she talks about this, she's talking about, you know, not really knowing how it's going to play out. She knows the variables and she knows, you know, the medicine about how it should play out. But, you know, there's so much to this because they're telling people, by and large, to stay home, stay inside, stay away from these mass gatherings. And in doing so, what they're trying to do is prevent the spread. If they prevent the spread, then they can make sure that people are not in a situation where they're having to, you know, where they're spreading it around very quickly, and then the health officials would be having to deal with these mass influxes of, people who are sick all at once. They're trying to keep it contained, keep it so health officials can handle it, and if they can keep people at home, keep them in smaller groups where they're not spreading it as much, they think that they have a better shot of dealing with it.
Andy, you're on the line now. Is that right?
Yep, I'm here.
Great. All right. So Joe's been just talking a little bit about what's been happening this week in terms of just trying to keep people safe from the coronavirus. We know that Governor DeWine has been having news conferences every day at 2 o'clock, and he will have one again today, which I want to let everyone know we will be bringing to you live on 91.7, so you can listen to that live as well. But Andy, what do you expect out of today, and how? What's your interpretation of what the governor has been trying to do this week?
Well, what we know so far is that, as far as the last question you just said, that he's been laying the groundwork out for some major changes. And I think what he's been trying to do is soften the blow throughout the past couple of days, just sort of saying, listen, be expecting major disruptions. He said it over and over and over again. And then he started with just a warning, and then he offered recommendations. And then little by little, every day, we saw more and more, resulting in the public health orders that he issued yesterday and the day before. As far as what he might announce today, he was actually at our office earlier today doing the rounds with the media. And, you know, the governor seemed to suggest that whatever he announces today, as far as any sort of public health orders, might not be too much of a big deal, as, definitely not as sweeping as maybe it was yesterday. I think that there are still a lot of questions, and I think the thing that he and his team, DeWine and his team, have been working on throughout the past 24 hours is just kind of the big fallout, the big response to everything that he laid out yesterday. And we have to remember, we're all going through a major public health crisis. We're all going through a pandemic at this point. So every single Ohioan has their certain issue that they have to face, has their certain crisis that they're dealing with. And so what we're seeing is we're hearing a lot of stories roll in, and I think what the governor's trying to do is listen to those stories. This is what he's been saying, is that he's been trying to listen to those stories and trying to figure out how the state can best address it. And I think what he's also said is that these public health orders are sort of a big, broad brush approach to helping people stay socially distant, to helping make sure that everybody can sort of not go out into mass gatherings. But he also said, even though he didn't say that churches shouldn't close or that places of worship shouldn't close or bars and restaurants, he is leaving that up to the different organizations as an individual decision. And so what I think we're hearing right now is that there's just a lot of different responses rolling in. And I think the other thing is what we might be hearing from, and this is just kind of what we're hearing, is what does the plan, what does the state plan to do when it comes to addressing the issues when it comes to childcare and daycares, and what should daycares be doing? What should they be thinking right now? There's a lot of kids who are not going to go to school. Parents might be trying to find daycares to put those kids in, but are daycares even going to be open, or what are the rules going to be for them?
Well, you were talking about the reaction that people have had to the announcements, and one of the, obviously the biggest announcement yesterday was when the governor did say that schools in Ohio would be closed for 3 weeks. That's a long time, and as you mentioned, child care is an issue. Food is an issue, and Joe, you've covered some stories about just emergency food and what might be done for people that don't have the means, especially in a time like this when they may not be able to continue working because their place of business may be closed. Tell us what you learned.
Well, you know, children, a lot of our children in Ohio get free or reduced lunch. So they are fed breakfast oftentimes at school. They're fed their lunch at school, and sometimes on the weekend they get the backpack program where they send home backpack food for them. So children are getting a lot of nutritional needs met through the schools. When there isn't school, all of those things go away, and we're in a new uncharted territory right now. We don't know how these kids are going to be fed. And Lisa Hamler-Fugit, who is over the Ohio Association of Food Banks, is concerned because, you know, she's dealing with a lot of government programs over there that have a lot of rules. They are not particularly easy to bend those rules. It's not easy to make this work. So she's, you know, coming at it from many different angles. But one of the huge things is we've got to consider how volunteer-driven our food system is for low-income people. For example, when you're talking about Meals on Wheels that serves our older population, a lot of the people who drive and deliver those food, the food items to the seniors who get that, they're older too. A lot of people who work in the food banks are older people. The people, the very people who are susceptible to catching this virus. And those are the ones that health officials are really urging to stay home. The older people, they're really concerned about them getting out there. People with an immune system where they might pick up something, they don't want them out there. And those are the same people who really are counted on every day to help serve the low-income populations of children, older folks in Ohio. So what they're basically saying, the state leaders are saying, hey, we're trying to work at it from our angle. We're trying to get waivers. We're trying to do what we need to do to make this work, you know, within the confines of this government program. But, you know, philanthropy groups, individuals out there, when you see needs, try to help us out here. And they're encouraging, you know, younger volunteers, these kids who are out of school. Now, they can't be in mass gatherings. They don't want that. But, you know, if a couple of kids wants to go around and help, you know, with food efforts or something like that, they're encouraging that.
What about the state legislature? We just have a few minutes left here, but do you anticipate they'll continue to meet? Are they meeting remotely now? What's the status, Andy?
So what we know so far is that the Senate staff have received word that they should not be coming to work, that all the Senate staffers should try to work from home, and the Senate caucus has laid out a system so that employees can still log hours on how much they work from home. We reached out to the House leadership, and there's still no word from them. And what we're seeing is that there are state legislatures around the country closing. And there's just kind of no word from the House about what's going on. The Senate's still operating. They just have their Senate staff at home. And then the other thing is we have this looming issue where, if listeners remember, there's a school voucher issue with a deadline of April 1st. So we have this really big legislative issue that's just kind of looming over everybody while we're also dealing with the pandemic.
I want to thank you both for being here. Again, we want to let everyone know that Governor Mike DeWine will be giving holding another news conference today at 2 o'clock, and we will be bringing you that coverage live here on 91.7 at 2 o'clock today with Karen Kassler. And Andy, I think you're going to join Karen as well for part of that, as well as attending that news conference. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
I've been talking with Ohio Public Radio State House correspondents Andy Chow and Joe Ingles. In just a moment, we'll talk with the WVXU news staff and others about what's happening in Cincinnati. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik, filling in for Michael Monks. We'll talk next about the news coming out of Cincinnati area hospitals and businesses. Joining me are WVXU reporters Jay Hanselman, Tana Weingartner, and Ambriel Crutchfield. You can call us with questions at 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. And as they were walking in the room, Ambriel just handed me your phone to let me know the latest. And the UC Health Department, UC Health rather, is confirming four patients have tested positive for COVID-19, initially seen at UC Health's Westchester Hospital. They've been treated and released, and they are not, of course, releasing the names to protect their privacy. So again, we do now have four cases in the Cincinnati area. So it has been quite a week as we continue on with everything. Jay, I want to start with you. You've been covering the city of Cincinnati as well as Tana. Tell us what's happening in the city of Cincinnati and in the county states of emergency.
I think what was interesting to me was the change in tone sort of from Tuesday to Wednesday this week. The city had a summit at the convention center with some invited guests to outline their plans for how to respond to COVID-19. I know the mayor and city manager were there, and they went through, a number of steps of what was being prepared. But then Wednesday, when you were at City Hall, you got the sense that things had changed just a little bit after a conference call that Mayor Cranley had with Ohio Governor Mike DeWine. And the big change there was, and I think Joe mentioned this in the earlier segment, was that the idea of community spread, where the first three cases were either people had been on a cruise to the Nile or they'd been to that conference out on the East Coast where there was a known case. But the case in Stark County that they identified Wednesday was community spread. That person had no travel history or any direct contact with somebody who had COVID-19. And I think that's what led to the state of emergency that Mayor Cranley declared on Wednesday afternoon. And basically, for right now, that's administrative. It allows the city to bypass some bidding procedures if there's supplies, medical supplies that they need to buy for first responders or officials with the health department. And if the federal or state government would make any emergency funding available to help with this response, it speeds up the process that they could take advantage of that.
Is that true for the county as well then?
Same thing for the county.
And they declared theirs?
They did theirs yesterday.
So what are we seeing in preparedness? Tana, you were at a news conference yesterday talking with the hospital officials, mm-hmm. talking about what they're doing to be ready. What did you hear and what was the tone?
Well, all of the kind of the big major ones were there. Mercy, TriHealth, UC Health. What else am I forgetting? Children's. Is that five? And they all kind of sort of briefly outlined the key takeaway they were saying was we're prepared. We're working together and we're trying to be transparent with information. So in terms of screening, they all seem to be setting up over the weekend. They hope to have these in place at least by Monday, I presume, some sort of screening area, that would be separate for people if they have been deemed that they need to come in. The key is do not go to an emergency room or to a hospital if you think you have symptoms. Call your primary care physician. Call a local health department. Call, there's the 800 number from the state. Don't just show up if you think. And then they're also setting up some triage systems in place, just to kind of keep the populations at the hospitals separate and safe.
And were you starting to say? Okay. The other thing I was mm-hmm. going to ask in terms of all of that, they want to keep them separate. They want people not to just come in. Do they talk at all about tests that are available and how they're doing testing at all?
Well, it's hard. I know a lot of people want numbers on this. They want to know how many people have it, how many tests are available, all these things. The numbers are constantly changing. There's not a lot, and the data is constantly changing. So we can't really put numbers on these things right now, at least not a number that's going to be the same in 5 minutes from now. So we don't know. I can't tell you right now how many tests are available, but they are going to, you know, sort of reserve them and test for people, you know, based on need or what your position is. You know, a doctor would get a test over just, you know, somebody that's coming in. And Dr. Dustin Calhoun with UC Health has said multiple times, you know, it doesn't necessarily, if you're not compromised, if you don't need acute medical care, it doesn't necessarily, you should do what you should do when you have the flu. You should isolate yourself, you know, stay home, take care of yourself, don't interact with people. And it doesn't really matter if you have a name to whatever it is that you have, as long as you're not spreading it to other people. Or if you need acute care, obviously that's different. But,
and I know I tweeted this yesterday as Tana was talking about the numbers. One of the county commissioners asked the county's interim health commissioner how many people they were following how many people they had tested here in Hamilton County. And the interim health commissioner at the time said, well, they had that number, but they had been asked not to provide it. And I think what I'm speculating is that the state was trying to control this, that they wanted the total number to come from the state so you didn't have individual health departments across the state releasing different numbers. I'm actually a little surprised that we got this from UC Health before it was maybe announced this afternoon by the state.
Yeah. There is something about having to announce within 2 hours of knowing. I don't know if that's
changed. Dr. Acton, the Ohio medical director, health director, I don't remember her exact title, that's been doing the news conferences with Mike DeWine, did say in yesterday's news conference that they are guesstimating that there are probably 100,000 people that have the disease.
There are carriers, but they may not be exhibiting symptoms.
Yet. Right. But they do have it, and we may not be aware of that at this point. Tell us what the mood is like at City Hall. You talked about how the news conference has changed. Are people still working in City Hall?
I was communicating with a couple of council. One council office I called today and got no answer, and I was messaging with another office. And they are the two offices that I tried to reach. They're both working remotely at this point. And I think a lot of the council staffs are doing that. It was interesting. We're talking about social distancing. The way the council chamber is set up, I think they want 6 feet between folks. The way the council dais is set up, that's not really possible right now. So they had the meeting this week as usual, but Mayor Cranley indicated that for the meeting next week, they're going to address that. So we're probably going to see some different spacing so that they at least can try to separate the council members on the dais during the council meeting.
Speaking of keeping people separate, Ambrielle Crutchfield, also WVXU reporter, is here. You were out in the community sort of talking to some restaurants and businesses. What did you find out?
Yeah, so I heard a lot of people kind of feeling like they weren't sure what to do. Of course, Mayor Cranley did make an announcement of this city being under a state of emergency, but it wasn't a clear declaration of if you're a private business, you should do X, Y, and Z. So when I went in, it was the beginning of the workday for people getting in. So they were This was yesterday. They were wiping down counters, making sure to wipe down handles. And so I just heard a lot of like being extra vigilant of like as soon as someone gets done touching something, they're wiping something down. I did stop by a Black-owned bookstore in Over the Rhine. And what was kind of interesting to me is that the owner, she is an elderly lady. So for her, it's a little hard to how do you clean a book properly if someone scans through the pages? And so that was something that was a concern for her. She did say that health is her priority. And so, you know, making the money if she needs to shut down for a couple hours, that's no problem to her because she want to make sure that she's up to date and healthy as well. It was interesting to me. I saw it while I was out and I was thinking, I'm like, oh, Alabama's Fish Bar. Normally when I go and eat there, or not eat in there, but when I'm in the lobby area, it's normally like we're all touching each other's shoulders, trying to wiggle our way out the door. So I'm like, how does that change their business? When I went in, there were only two people that were ordering, and I spoke to the manager there, who basically said they were considering changing their hours just because he didn't see a point in staying open with so little foot traffic. They weren't even seeing regular customers. So it's very interesting if we, like Jay mentioned, as far as federal bills that will come down to kind of generate and stimulate the economy, it's looking like that stalled as of last night, or it's 5 a.m. this morning. So I'm not sure what happens for local businesses right now.
You also talked to some workers who are hourly or waitresses or servers, I should say, and were not the kind of people who perhaps were in a position to just stop working and they'd be fine because of savings. What did you hear from people about how they felt if they can't go to work?
Yeah, I spoke to a woman. She's a sales representative at a boutique. And so she actually lives in Kentucky. And she was like, if I need to, she's planning to go and try to stay out in the country with her family. She said for the moment, you know, she has her husband to kind of rely on as far as money goes. And so, but she doesn't have a long-term plan of if the boutique shuts down or if business slows down, what she'll do financially.
I know a lot of people, I just was talking to someone today and I hadn't heard this elsewhere, although I'm sure it has been around, you know, people like hairstylists and stuff like that who they're also worried. But some people are now hearing that they might be getting furloughed too, which I had not till now heard the word furlough get kind of thrown around, you know, work from home, all of these sorts of things. But that's another option that people are going to have to start considering.
We did get a question, and I'm not sure any of you know the answer to this. It was from someone named Paul who called to ask, are bowling alleys off limits with the new rules? Now, everything's
well,
open
okay,
at this point,
yeah,
right?
I don't know. The places can stay open, so right, they just might need to monitor their numbers. I don't know if, you know, they fall into a specific thing. But for example, the museum center is intending to stay open. At least that's as of today, they're intending to stay open. But they are limiting the number of people that they will allow in any one museum at any given time. Places where, so I play a lot of soccer, as our listeners probably know. I've had letters from both the places that I play at saying, you know, we're staying open for now. They've canceled some of the youth things. But, you know, at least one of the places said, we're going to reevaluate our schedule, move the games further apart so there's just fewer people in the facility at any given time.
And Mayor Cranley has said a couple times, and I think he reiterated it yesterday, that they need businesses to mm-hmm. stay open.
Yeah.
He quoted grocery stores. Now, if anyone saw the pictures that I saw on social media last night, grocery stores were probably way packed beyond the 100 or so
sure.
in large gatherings. But, I mean, the goal is to keep as many businesses opened as possible. And like the mayor said, you know, to be providing those public services that people expect from the government.
Now, Governor DeWine said, was it less than 100 gathered together? So, although there were some exceptions.
There's exceptions, yeah.
And Jay, this afternoon, you're going to a news conference with the mayor related to church services?
Correct. At 2 o'clock, the mayor is going to be with some leaders of different faiths, and they're going to talk about what this means for, you know, worship services this weekend.
I did want to bring up, and how can we forget, there's an election in Ohio on Tuesday. And some people have already voted absentee or voted in person at the Board of Elections, and they don't have to think about it. But there are people that wait to vote till Election Day. And Jay, you've talked with, we had Sally Crystal from the Board of Elections on, Deputy Director of the Board of Elections on yesterday. You talked with her again today. There was a call out for poll workers because there was concern that there weren't enough people to work the polls. What did you find out today?
The good news is people are heeding the call to step up and be poll workers, but they still would like more calls. I talked to Sally this morning. So they're still urging anyone who can make time this weekend to attend a four-hour training class. And that would be Sunday afternoon or Monday morning. You also have to be available to work Monday night to pre-set up a polling location. And then, of course, you have to be available all day Tuesday to help with the election. But they are still accepting calls, and you can get more information online. The number is 513-632-7000, or you can go to votehamiltoncountyohio.gov, and all those words are spelled out.
Give the phone number again.
513-632-7000. And if people are also concerned about, you know, voting on Tuesday because of the lines, you can vote early. And early voting continues today at the Board of Elections until 7 o'clock. They will be there tomorrow from 8 until 4, Sunday 1 to 5, and Monday from 8 until 2 if you want to vote early at the Board of Elections. And that's not just Hamilton County. That's anywhere, any county Board of Election in the state of Ohio. Those hours are uniform across the state.
What else do we need to know? You all have been out in the field and a lot of other things have been going on. Tana, you, I know, at the news conference with the hospitals, learned a lot about just how they've prepared for this sort of thing. Do they feel like they are prepared?
That is their, what they've been reiterating is that they're prepared and they're ready. One thing they say why is because they have this, we have the Health Collaborative in Cincinnati. So they're always working together. They do something called a surge drill every, roughly once a year. And in a surge drill, they literally have to move an entire hospital's worth of patients within 90 minutes. So each hospital needs to be able to absorb 20 to 50% into their stock. And they said they did it, I think he said it was just in the fall they had the most recent one and it was successful. That includes everything from, you know, finding ambulances or ways to get the patients there. So they also track hospital beds. That, I believe, is checked twice daily. They have a program that kind of looks at all the beds across the area, or at least in the Cincinnati area. It also tracks, they can track ventilators. That's checked daily. And the Health Collaborative also tracks isolation rooms.
And I also want to point out, Tana did do a story about Meals on Wheels needing help with volunteers. So I know that it can feel like a lot of news is coming out and how do you help out, but that's a way for people to volunteer and help get meals out.
Yeah, a lot of people are asking. I'm getting a lot of calls about, you know, they needed 50 people, so I don't want everybody to call up this particular Meals on Wheels place now because that is getting a lot of traction. But people are asking where else they can provide supports. You know, if you can't go places, maybe make donations to certain places like the food bank of your choice or, you know, nonprofits that are doing that kind of work.
And we learned this morning, too, that the Public Library of Cincinnati and Hamilton County will be closing all their locations this evening at 6 o'clock, and they're going to remain closed for at least a week because of COVID-19, and they'll evaluate that on a weekly basis. They did, in their press release, they said they had one person who worked at the library's distribution center who is in self-quarantine, but they've had no other reports of any positive test or anyone with exposure in the library system to COVID-19.
And we should say, we heard at the top of the show, or top of this segment, that there are now cases in this area,
Ohio.
Southwest Ohio. It was Westchester, UC Health, and it was
four confirmed cases of COVID-19.
We do have one call we'll get to, and this is Mark. Hi, Mark. What's your question?
Well, it's not so much. Well, first is a comment that and during the morning and evening commutes, I'm not seeing any reduction in the number of people traveling back and forth to work. I just watched a large contingent of people leave a church after Mass, and I think the people are they're listening to the language of the president, who is minimizing everything. They're not taking this seriously, and I just don't know if the state or the city has any plan in place to get the accurate public information out there. Because if people don't take this seriously, it's going to continue to spread.
Jay, I'm going to let you take that one. As you said, the businesses are, Mark, thanks for your call. The businesses are encouraged to stay open. So it's not like we are going to see great drops in traffic, I suppose, until the schools close.
Correct. And I would take small exception today. And you know that I drive an hour every day. Traffic was extremely light this morning. And it was almost – Fridays are always a little bit light, but this morning was extremely light. It actually surprised me. And – quite honestly, now I think it takes, you know, perceptually, there are now four cases in Southwest Ohio, and I think that is probably okay. Up until now, it was Northeast
Cleveland,
Ohio,
right.
The Cleveland area. Now it's in our own backyard. And even after yesterday's announcement, I think, from the governor about the schools, look at the run on the supermarkets.
There's no toilet paper to be found, apparently.
And you were talking, you know, 30-minute to 60-minute waits just to check out, and the shelves bare at the end of the day for most supermarkets.
Well, thank you all for being here. Jay is going to stay with us and talk in a little bit about some of the news that's not related to COVID-19. There were a couple big stories that came out this week. So I want to thank you all for being here. I've been talking with WVXU reporters Jay Hanselman, Ambrielle Crutchfield, and Tana Weingartner, who will be working all through this, maybe even into the weekend if there are things going on, and into next week. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik, filling in for Michael Monks. Joining me now, Kentucky Public Radio Capitol Bureau Chief Ryland Barton. You can call in your questions at 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. Hi, Ryland. Thanks for joining me.
Hi there. Happy to be here.
So you've been covering Governor Beshear's news conferences, and I think he's been having two a day. There was one this morning. Tell us what he had to say.
Yeah, so he's been updating with the latest numbers on confirmed cases in Kentucky. We're now up to 11 cases, and those are in Jefferson County, which is Louisville, Fayette County, which is Lexington, and Harrison County, which is the county seat there is a small town of Cynthiana, which is where the first confirmed case was reported a few days ago. And yeah, I think he's been reporting. He's been providing information, kind of the same as officials have been providing across the country, urging people to avoid large groups, especially if you're over 60 years old or have a medical condition. And the best way to prevent this is also having good hygiene, frequently washing hands. I think the biggest news lately is that yesterday evening he announced recommending that all school districts across the state temporarily close, at least for in-person instruction. School districts that have the ability to do non-traditional online teaching may go forward with doing that, but most districts don't, including the largest in Lexington and Louisville. So it's looking like at least a 2 week break starting Monday for Kentucky schools.
There are a variety of things you mentioned there I'd like to follow up on. Let's start first with Cynthiana. And apparently, if I'm getting this right, one of the people there that has shown signs of COVID-19 or been confirmed case of COVID-19 was working at a Walmart. Is that correct?
That's right. And that Walmart's still open. Both state and state officials and spokespeople for Walmart have said it's safe and that there hasn't been any threat of being spread there. There are five cases in Harrison County there, and they are those are all thought to be related. State epidemiologists think that, but there's no real connection. There's no suspicion that any of the cases between the counties at this point are connected.
Now, there are also, you talked about the other two counties where there are confirmed cases. In other areas, they're saying there are probably a lot of other people that have the symptoms or may not be showing symptoms yet, but may have the COVID-19. Are you hearing that in Kentucky as well, that the problem is that people have it, we just don't know they have it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's generally what is going on right now. It's hard, I think officials here have been hesitant to, come out with a number or a real prediction on, how many people might already have the disease but aren't showing symptoms for it. The struggle here, as is the struggle across most of the country, it's just there's not a lot of testing available right now. Kentucky, all the cases right now, up until I think yesterday, have been required to be confirmed by the state lab in Frankfurt. There are now two other private testing firms and agencies that are testing in Kentucky, one at U of L, also LabCorp, a large private testing company. And the state and Governor Beshear keeps on saying that, that number, 11 confirmed cases in Kentucky is likely going to shoot up once a lot more people get tested, because there have been so few. I think it's 138 people have been tested so far. And once more people, or once testing becomes more available, we'll start to get a better idea of just how many folks might have the disease. Right now, the people who are getting those tests are, again, same deal. This is what the CDC recommends, and people who are showing symptoms.
Let's talk about the schools. That was a few days in coming. I know my daughter's in school in Northern Kentucky, and they were warning them for a few days that the announcement was probably going to come, and it did come yesterday in terms of the schools being closed. What does that mean, and why did the governor, Ohio's governor, close them for 3 weeks, Kentucky's governor just two? Any word on why the length of time, or if he expects to expand that?
He left the door open for expanding that. I think that 2 weeks is just kind of the initial number thrown out right now. He said that it could be longer, especially, certainly for other school districts that are either in already in spring break right now or have spring breaks that start after that 2-week period. You know, they would essentially be a 3-week long spring break for them. But a lot of these are being, these numbers for, say, the time in which the schools are going to be closed, or even, businesses or other sorts of state services, it's really going to be monitored on a going forward basis. And in terms of why they're doing this, as we've been talking about a lot, the most at-risk population are the elderly and people with a chronic health condition. Certain, students are not really the people who are going to, they're worried about having, really debilitating reactions to this disease. However, they can still carry it. They can very easily spread it. And certainly, schools are, it's a great environment for close contact. And that's, and the biggest recommendation right now is people kind of keeping their space and to keep this disease from transferring between folks.
Let's talk about the state legislature. They are taking a bit of a break.
Yeah, they canceled session today and also Monday. This is it could go longer. They said this is kind of an initial evaluation period where they'll figure out what to do going forward. So the big thing that the legislature has to do this year is pass a 2-year budget. They're about 3/4 of the way through the legislative session. They've got 14 more working days. The Kentucky Constitution requires the session to be done by April 15th. So there's a bit of a shot clock on this legislative session, and we'll see what lawmakers say, whether or not they're going to extend this break. They, again, left the door open for it going longer, but we'll see. So far, the only measures that they've really been taking in the Capitol have been spacing seats apart to try and do some of that social distancing. So far, they'll be back at work on Tuesday.
Do you anticipate just the legislators back or their staffs as well?
They've been talking a little bit about that they might restrict the legislative session to, essential staff and lawmakers and reporters. But there's been no concrete proposals on what that might look like so far.
Any talk about the Kentucky Derby?
I think there's a lot of worries about the Kentucky Derby right now, especially after, these last couple of days where we saw the NBA and the NCAA tournament and Kentucky, the boys and girls high school tournaments being canceled. Well, I guess in the NBA's case, it's, technically just suspended right now. That's the big next thing we're waiting for. First Saturday in May, the Kentucky Derby takes place. And even back in 1918, in the great, flu epidemic back then, the Kentucky Derby took place. This is certainly a worrisome situation. There's, thousands of people that come to Louisville to watch the Kentucky Derby or to participate in the festivities that week. And it's it would be a big hit to the local and state economy if that were to be canceled. I did hear there's one rumor going around that they might consider delaying the Kentucky Derby. So we'll see what happens.
The governor also has talked about pay for workers and for making sure insurance covers testing. What can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, today the governor announced that he would be guaranteeing wage protections for all first responders who are responding to the coronavirus if they're quarantined, so that they won't be losing any pay if they have to take time off. And he said that there are already workers in Kentucky, first responders, who have been quarantined just out of, out of possible contact with people with coronavirus. We're not sure how many. But other than that, he's recommending that employers across the state provide paid sick leave to workers. This is, Kentucky is one of many states that doesn't have that guarantee. And I think that we're one of the highest rates in the country that has employees that don't have paid work leave protections. He's also enacted that for state workers already, for, say, a worker who is new on the job and hasn't yet accrued those benefits. And so that's yeah, that's something going forward that he's suggesting that employers adopt those sorts of policies as well. Same deal with telecommuting. He's recommended that a lot of state boards and commissions and public workers, you know, telecommute when they can to work, and also encouraging private employers to do that as well. Although there's no requirement that they do so. And I, you know, just anecdotally, I have been hearing a lot of employers doing that, but certainly some are unable to do that.
And very quickly, you also had been reporting about some Carnival cruise passengers from Kentucky. What's happening with that?
Yeah, 16 Kentuckians were on one of the cruise ships that was being quarantined with suspected coronavirus patients. None of the 16 that are being returned to Kentucky have coronavirus. They've tested negative for it. But yeah, they've been there's 16 of them, and they've been returned back home earlier this week.
When will the governor be having his next news conference? Do you know?
He'll be having another one at 5 this evening. He's been having these twice a day, and he'll be having one on Saturday and one on Sunday as well. So going forward right now, I think he's going to keep on having these daily and sometimes twice daily updates.
And are you anticipating anything particular out of this afternoon's?
I think, you know, what we're the big headline on every one of these, but really, really what he kind of leads with is the number of confirmed cases. He said there's another batch of tests that the state will be running through. So we're just kind of waiting to see how many more people test positive for coronavirus. He says in every press conference that we expect more to test positive, just again, because of how few people have been tested so far. The more testing we get, it's just kind of inevitable that the more positive results we get back.
Ryland, thank you so much. We appreciate you being
Thanks
here today.
Thanks for having me.
Ryland Barton is Kentucky Public Radio's Capitol Bureau Chief. Joining me now to talk about some non-COVID-19 news, WVXU's Jay Hanselman joins me. Some big stories you may have missed this week, and there actually was news other than this.
Yeah, can we? There's one other COVID-19, though, thing that we just got in, and I know this was mentioned yesterday. The Crone Conservatory is going to be closing today at 5 o'clock. And they're going to remain shut down until further notice. And that's sort of a big deal because everyone looks forward to the butterfly show, which was coming up. So that means that the butterfly show at the Crone Conservatory is going to be delayed.
All right. Well, let's move on to something else. Not necessarily good news, but news. Talk about the Western Hills Viaduct. There's some news about that. We hear a lot about the Western Hills Viaduct and how it needs to be repaired, rebuilt. What came out this week?
For the first time ever, they are now putting a load limit on some commercial vehicles that use the Western Hills Viaduct. And we're talking about vehicles that have more than one axle. So like 2, 3, 4, 5, I think up to 6 axle, even like dump trucks that use the viaduct. They're now reducing some of the weight limits that those trucks can now carry across the viaduct. It does not apply to most buses, and it also does not apply to semis. But it points out the problem that the viaduct is aging. We know that it's crumbling. The routine inspections where they remove concrete that's falling from the upper deck down to the lower deck. And this just, again, further highlights the need that the viaduct needs to be replaced. Matter of fact, County Commission President Denise Driehaus, the county had to approve this. The city takes care of it. The county is the one who actually owns the viaduct. And Commissioner Driehaus made a point that this resolution that limits the weight on the viaduct should be sent to the local federal delegation to say, look, we need federal help to get the money to replace this viaduct.
What other options do people have if they can't take the viaduct? They go around?
They'll just have to go around. And we're talking a small amount of traffic. Again, these are heavier commercial vehicles, cars, trucks, minivans, you know, SUVs, buses, regular semis. They're not going to have a problem. It's just some of these, particularly, I know, I think some dump trucks have 5 or 6 axles. So they're just going to, and they can still use it. They're just going to have to reduce the weight that they're hauling in their vehicles.
And no news on what they might do to replace it or fix it at this point.
They are chipping away. I think the last total was close to $340 million to replace it, and I think they maybe have a third of it. So they're, you know, they're working. They're applying for as many grants as they can to try to come up with the money. Issue 7 that's on the ballot on the Tuesday primary, some of that funding will be for infrastructure work, and it's possible that some of that money could go to the Western Hills Viaduct. I know Cincinnati City Council has said that's its number one priority with those funds that will come from Issue 7 for infrastructure work.
And, of course, it's a pretty important artery to get to the west side.
Yeah,
in Cincinnati.
Very important.
Let's talk also about Cincinnati Council. There's a new member this week.
There is a new member. Councilwoman Tamaya Denard resigned a couple of weeks ago after being federally charged. And she had designated Councilmember Sittenfeld to select her replacement. And he did that during an event on Wednesday. He selected Jan Michelle Lemon Kearney, who is the publisher of the Cincinnati Herald, also a real estate agent and an attorney in private practice in Cincinnati. And she was announced on Wednesday, and her swearing in and her official seating on council will be coming up this next Wednesday.
So she'll already start that quickly?
Yeah. Betsy Sunderman, who replaced Amy Murray, Amy resigned, and about 10 minutes later, Betsy Sunderman took her place. So there's a week between Tamaya and this appointment and when she'll actually be sworn in for.
So will she be able to attend committee meetings next week, or will she not start until Wednesday's meeting?
She probably will not start until next week's meeting. I guess she could attend as a guest, but she won't be able to officially vote on anything until they make her a member of the committees.
And she is a publisher of the Cincinnati Herald, as you said. Did she say she was going to continue with that work?
I believe she said, and I wasn't at the press conference. I'm relying on secondhand information, but I believe that she's going to try to scale that back to focus on being a council member.
So council's got all kinds of big changes there. What about the Metropolitan Sewer District?
The focus this week has been on Muddy Creek in Greene Township, and there is actually a pretty large sewer main that is actually buried in the creek bed. And over years of erosion, that sewer line has been exposed to where you can actually see it in the creek bed. They have been arguing for a couple of years on how to replace it. Federal regulators had wanted it replaced by the end of the year, and that didn't happen. This week, the county and city have come to an agreement that there will be some temporary patching of the worst holes in the sewer line while they work on design and engineering and how they're going to pay for a permanent replacement. The county's concern has been all along. Everyone agrees that there needs to be a permanent replacement of this pipe, and they want to get it out of the creek. But the county was concerned with the city's plan that the city was going to install too large a pipe that would just take the problem further downstream, closer to the Ohio River and closer to Sailor Park. And so that's what they will try. The city provided some data to say that is not going to be an issue, and the county is going to be reviewing that now and again, trying to come up with this permanent fix.
Wasn't there some concern that you said it's not an issue? That part's not an issue, but there's always some issue with MSD, it seems.
Any given day, there could be a different issue with MSD. This is the latest one. And it all goes back to this, you know, basically there are going to be problems with MSD until one or the other is in charge. Either the county is fully in charge or the city is fully in charge. Right now, the county owns the sewer district and sets the budget and policy. The city runs the day-to-day operations, and they oftentimes don't agree.
So we just wait.
We just wait.
All right. We do have a couple minutes left. I hate to go back to COVID-19, but I will. I just want everyone to know that we do now have 4 cases in Southwest Ohio. Oh, excuse me. We do have a call. If my producer would push that over so I can put it on the air, I will do that right now. Oh, it's on. P.G. Sittenfeld is joining us. Yes, P.G., Cincinnati Council member.
Hey, Marianne. Hey, Jay. I'm in the car between meetings and caught the show. Informative as always. I just wanted to chime in with 2 quick comments. One, I realize it can feel sometimes a little bit confusing to the public to say we've got this state of emergency while also encouraging folks to frequent small businesses and help them. And I think the one point I just want to stress is so much of the situation around COVID-19 is around slowing its spread. You know, we're not going to stop every single person from getting this, but it's really about not overwhelming and wrecking the capacity of our healthcare system. So, you know, obviously when people have sort of discretion and can voluntarily interact with fewer people, it's, you know, best to do so. Council members are going to try and do that too. The other thing I just wanted to chime in on, we were delighted to welcome Jan Michelle Lemon Kearney to announce her as our newest council member this week. And, you know, some folks said I moved very efficiently. I tried to balance being thoughtful with moving efficiently. But, you know, heaven forbid we were in a situation where, you know, we were had a 4-4 vote and something couldn't pass. Or, you know, in the situation
we are
multiple council members.
We're out of time. Thank you so much.
Well,
I appreciate it. All right.
So much.
Take care. Well, I've been talking, that was Cincinnati City Councilman P.G. Sittenfeld. I've been talking with WVXU's government reporter Jay Hanselman. Producer for today's show was Elise Meckler. Assistant producer Selena Reeder. Today's technical director was Josh Elstro. Archives of our program are available on our website, WVXU.org. I'm Marianne Zalesnik, filling in for Michael Monks.